Today on Snail Trail 4x4, Jimmy and Tyler avoid getting moist.
Snail Trail 4x4 is brought to you by Bestline Racing. Bestline Racing has a complete lineup of performance additives for your engine's needs. From our oil additives to our fuel treatments, we have you covered for your hobby, tow rig, race car, or your daily driver. Check the show notes for your Snail Trail 4x4 discount at bestlineracing.com.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Snail Trail 4x4 podcast. If you like going off-roading in Toyotas, wrenching on Toyotas, camping in Toyotas, and maybe even poking a little bit of fun at Toyotas, and of course, hearing about how awesome Toyotas do in the snow, because it's that time of season, then this is the podcast for you. That's right, ladies and germs, my name is Tyler. Welcome to the show. This is episode 164. 164 of these with Mr. Snail Trail himself, Mr. Jet Black. How are you, Jet?
High five.
I am doing great, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I've got a couple of ailments going on of the physical and mental kind, so I might mention them a little bit later in the podcast because it kind of has to do with the show, but we'll see.
Oh.
We'll see
So your back is shot because you were sleeping on the ice?
No, I think I got ringworm because I stayed bundled up the whole weekend.
Oh.
So it's like on the back of my arm and my shoulder right here. Like,
let's see. That's not ringworm.
It totally is.
It's not a ring.
Yeah, it is. You have to look at it. I can't. I'm wearing a shirt right now. It's hard to do, and I have coffee in my hand.
It looks like a rash.
I mean, but it's like. It is in a ring. Like it started appearing last night or the night before.
We just got there, by the way.
Yeah. We just what?
We just went there.
Oh, yeah. True. I don't know. Anyways, good times on the podcast, on the show here with everybody. If you are on your way to Hammers and listening to this, congratulations. I applaud you. I'm lame and not making it down there. Oh, by the way, so I was talking with Jason a while back, a couple weeks ago now, and he said that Chris was not going.
Right.
Is what he told me.
Yes. And then we said Chris was not going.
And then we said Chris was not going, and nobody ever corrected us because Chris is down there right now.
Right. And nobody
he got his pregnancy test and passed.
Yeah, nobody knew that he was going until the last moment. And he's only going for, like, he's leaving the day I show up.
Well, that's
so
a bummer.
He's only there for
so
a few
you're
gonna
like
days.
High five him on Boone Road
yeah.
right through?
Yeah. On I-5.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I was questioning ringworm because because I used to wrestle in high school.
Yeah.
And so one of the things about...
We're going back to the rash.
Yeah. Because You get ringworm from skin-to-skin contact of from other people.
Interesting. So I thought it was like a fungus that...
You don't know. It has to be from somewhere else. So like unless your jacket has been worn by somebody else that had ringworm and they sweat into your jacket.
Yeah.
Then that might be possible because you could get wrestlers would get ringworm because yeah. they'll be
I know it's
somebody
really
might
there.
have ringworm. Mm-hmm. They're wrestling and they're on the mat and they're sweating and then somebody else wrestles and sweats and rolls over mm-hmm. that, you know, and then they could get ringworm from that.
Interesting.
But it's not, it's transmitted from my knowledge, it's transmitted for like more or less skin to skin contact.
Interesting.
So unless
I haven't really had
ringworm by yourself,
right?
You're like, I've got ringworm on my hand, and now I got it on my leg. No, so that's one another reason I was kind of questioning like what it was. You know,
interesting.
I think you just got a rash or something from
it. Itches a lot.
Maybe you got poison oak. I don't know how you would have gotten poison oak at this season, but
I don't
know
either, man.
Unless you can get poison oak from getting scratched by the branch.
But
usually it's the oils from the leaf.
Yeah. We weren't really in any poison oak.
Yeah. And not like the back of like your shoulder blade.
Yeah.
Your lat.
My lats. Yeah.
It wasn't like right, exposed to the elements too much.
Yeah. It's right there. I don't know. It's weird. Anyways,
Yeah. Moving on. So yeah, Chris is down there. Uh-huh. Congratulations to him.
Yep.
I'm glad he actually took some time off.
Yeah, me too. That's good, because I know that guy works a lot mm-hmm. of hours.
Yeah. I can't remember, because Jason did a live stream when they were at their meeting point. I forgot where that was before they were going all the way down. Like mm-hmm. they drove from the Bay Area all the way down to some Harris Ranch,
like near
where they met.
Gotcha.
And then they did a live stream there, and he did like showed all these rigs that were around him.
Okay.
And he showed Chris's, and I don't remember if he brought his Jeep or if he just brought the camper. Mm. I can't recall. But
rumor has it that the Jeep might be getting some upgrades here this year. The Barbie Jeep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In theory. He was hinting about it, but who knows?
I know he supposedly hit the purchase button. So I don't know if he actually did or if that's him just kind of talking smack, but we'll
see. He's been working enough
yeah.
to be able to pull some of that stuff off.
I was going to say he did a lot of year-end purchasing. So I'm wondering if he got a pretty nice bonus.
Maybe.
Which hopefully he did for as many hours as that guy put in last year.
Yes.
So I'll be excited. I'm super excited to see if the Barbie Jeep gets built a little bit more than where it's at now. Hopefully 2021 will see Kermit getting built further. And it's going to see Blanche getting built.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to start, I think parts are starting to roll in now.
Yeah.
We have the axle housing from Rough Stuff.
Have we ordered things from Nitro?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Everything from Nitro is ordered up. I think the only thing we're missing to kind of completely set up his axle is his steering and brakes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then everything else I think is going to be good to go. We should have, and the Hellfire knuckles.
Right.
Because those are extremely backordered right now.
Yeah.
We're going to, once everything starts showing up from Nitro, we'll start putting it all together.
All systems go.
Hells yeah. And then Samantha is going to get built this year.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still waiting on a couple of confirmations from a couple of key players there.
Yep. Yeah, we'll say that.
And we'll see what happens there. We're still in the waiting period on that. Otherwise, Samantha would have been like halfway done by now.
Oh, I don't know about that, but mm-hmm. it would have been much farther than where just sitting on jack stands in the frame and an engine. That's for yeah. sure.
It's now being used as a table now, Samantha is.
Yeah, to some small extent.
A really big table.
Yeah. I have the second version of the Tundra tailgate sitting across the frame rails, and that is a chunk of a table right there.
Table, yeah.
Yeah, I did completely rearrange the shop to fit Clifford in to do some mm-hmm. Prep work on it. And
KOH prep.
And so like half of the shop is nice and clean and pristine and brand new and untouched, and then the other half is just mad chaos because to fit this ginormous truck inside the shop, I had to rearrange like half the shop.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
Well, we'll get into that a little bit later. Yeah. This I just kind of wanted to mention some of the things that we kind of have on the books for 2021. Yeah. So we have 1, 2, 3 builds
mm-hmm.
on the books. We have the treasure hunt on the books ready to go for 2021. This show is actually coming out on February 1st. So we are launching the coordinates of the first 5 tokens over on Patreon as of today. So hopefully you listening to this show, all the patrons out there can go and check the post on Patreon, and that'll give you the coordinates. And that's all we're giving right now is just the GPS coordinates. And then I know GPS coordinates are accurate to within about 5 to 10 feet.
Yeah.
So you're gonna have to look around within 5, 10 feet. We have pictures that give the precise location that will kind of give it away where each token is hidden. But we're going to wait a little bit to put those out.
Yeah, that's not going to be released until like if somebody doesn't find it for years.
Yeah. Yeah. So all you're getting is the GPS coordinates. So we'll have those out as of today. So if you're a patron, go check it out. If you guys want those GPS coordinates, you got to give us at least $5.
monthly.
So, let's see.
Yeah, and then I guess I got to get my rear end in gear because we do have
Is that a pun intended puck, or
not really?
Oh, okay.
Each puck or each token mm-hmm. Is going to get a small prize.
Yep.
Right. And then mm-hmm. if you get all 13, you're going to get a bigger prize. But really, I have to concern myself with the small prizes right now.
Yeah.
Because I'm assuming as soon as we release, we'll have a few people go and find them.
Yep. So. We did get in some Super Duty koozies.
Yes, we did.
So those could be some small prizes. Mm-hmm. I might have an idea for a large prize as well.
Ooh.
That Morphlate might be able to donate. So,
sweet. All right.
Yeah. So the that's a couple of the fun updates, some of the things that we're looking forward to this year. Hopefully, as more vaccines go out, we'll be able to do some more listener meetups.
Yes.
So hopefully we were planning for listener meetups this year, maybe a Salmon Run or two.
That'd be awesome.
Da-da-da. And yeah, so that's kind of, we took January to kind of, I don't know, plan out a little bit of what we wanted to do this year. So those are some of the things that we have that we're looking forward to.
Cool.
For 2021.
Since we're talking about listener meetups, and if there is anybody listening to this that's going to KOH, I am going to be, I think what the game plan is, and I'll post stuff up on Instagram, but Thursday night or Thursday afternoon, 4 p.m., I'll do like a meetup somewhere, and I'm really leaning towards like the main entrance to Hammertown, not in Hammertown.
Gate 1.
Yeah, gate 1 okay. into Hammertown. Outside so that, you know, everybody can meet up if need be. But yeah, so 4 p.m. Thursday at Gate 1.
Nice. Yeah, Gate 1, that is the one on the far side, right? Of the far side of everything over past the belly flop area?
Yeah, somewhat. I believe so.
Okay.
I mean, I don't remember which ones they are, but there are kind of like some smaller gates, and then there's like the main one.
Yeah,
I think so.
I'm pretty sure the main one is the one that's over near Pit Row.
Yes.
Okay.
That one.
Cool. Awesome. So Gate 1 over by Pit Row. Look for Jimmy Thursday afternoon around 4 p.m.
Yeah.
You guys can have a belly flop contest.
Yeah, I'll be there for half an hour to an hour. So
okay.
Swing by, say hi. I'll hand out some stickers or some other swag, and be nice to meet you guys. But yeah, it's going to be a busy few days down there in Hammer, so I don't have a ton of time. So
nice. Did you see the Pivot Rock in Chocolate Thunder?
I heard about it, but I didn't see it.
Oh man, there's a great video. It's out on Johnson Valley Crawler's Instagram of somebody, a truck going down Chocolate Thunder, and he went around the pivot rock and completely just pushed the pivot rock out. He was using it as a pivot rock.
Oh wow.
And the pivot rock moved and is now about 20 feet downhill.
Holy
cow. In the middle of Chocolate Thunder, about 20 feet downhill now.
Perfect.
I know, right? So I'm like, that could be interesting now. I think you can still go like right or left of it fairly easily, but it's no longer a pivot rock.
No,
so
it's now an obstacle.
It's now an obstacle, yeah. So that'll be interesting to see how that impacts the race. I don't think it's going to impact it that much. I'm really excited to see... I've been looking at some of the pictures of like Shannon Campbell, doing, God, what is that? The new trail that was just broken and named, the King's, it's like the King's Demise or the King's,
like that.
The King's, anyways, that obstacle. Remember. I'm interested to see what happens in there with, the cars going up and down. So yeah, good times. And you're going to be there to, watch it all.
I will.
Yeah. So you're coming back Sunday, right?
Yes.
Okay. Cool. That's Sunday. That's Super Bowl Sunday, right?
Yes.
So interesting. I wonder how many people are going to try and stop somewhere or watch the game before they leave or just book it on home and try and get home before the game. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll probably pull it up on the radio.
Yeah.
As I cruise. Yeah. I'm not, I mean, you know, not that I have a football team, but my team's not in it, and I'm not too interested. What I am interested in is the old gun versus the new gun, you know, then with Mahomes and Brady.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I don't really give a...
You're like, whatever.
Yeah. We need a beep noise on here.
Beep. I thought we had one, like a censored. It should be censored.
No, we don't have one.
What?
Yeah.
Interesting. We need to add that on.
Yeah. We should have something like that.
So, cool. Let's, any other updates? The, giveaway for January is officially closed, as of listening to this, if you're listening to this episode. So the giveaway is closed. We will announce it, once Jimmy's back from Hammers. So it'll be not this week, but next week. And, we'll announce that winner. And, February is going to be a Gear Wrench tool bundle.
Yep. Gear, all kinds of gear wrench tools, and some, tool kits, possibly. We'll see what's available. Mm-hmm. We do have some miscellaneous gear wrench stuff kind of laying around in the shop, and some not really miscellaneous gear wrench stuff. Some nice kits laying around in the shop that we, all might get bundled together and give you guys, what did we say, a $200 to $300 value of some awesome, awesome tools.
Yep. And then also, we got a winner for the runner-up giveaway for the Ultimate Garage giveaway, and we have officially delivered it.
We have,
And we will talk about it a little bit more on Thursday's episode.
Excellent.
Because we did that over the weekend here. So if you did not get a big delivery of some gear wrench toolboxes and some tools from us, then you didn't win. Just letting you guys know right now. There you go. Yeah. I know that there's going to be a few disappointed people out there. Sorry.
I'm disappointed.
I know, right?
They were in my garage for like a month or so waiting on some very key features to show up.
Yeah.
And you're, I'm like,
I wonder if anyone would notice if this really kit went missing. Oh man. So I think that just about does it for updates. Can you think of anything else before we head into today's campfire discussion?
No, I think that's pretty good. Just, you know, speed safely, everybody.
There we go. So without further ado, go ahead and grab your favorite yerba mate, your favorite pink monster energy drinks, and we'll be right on back with today's campfire discussion. Welcome back, ladies and gentle ladies out there, all the boys and girls, and of course all the trail dogs, and shout out to all the sleeping trail participants, the sleeping passengers, the right seats sleepers out on the trails. This episode's for you guys. So yeah, today's campfire discussion is going to be a fun one, I think, just because I really like doing this activity. Jimmy really likes doing this activity. And there's a lot of people out there that don't really enjoy this activity. And I feel like the number one reason by far is because people don't know how to prepare for this activity.
Okay.
And they don't know how to pack for this activity. And so, like, for instance, we were out that last weekend, right, when I was out snow wheeling, snow camping.
Yes.
And there was a couple people that had just basic tennis shoes with cotton socks and, and like flannel pajama pants. And they're walking around in those in the morning and saying how cold they are and their feet were freezing. And I'm like, well,
duh.
Yeah.
Sure.
So I wanted to do this episode because I think it's a really snow camping can be a lot of fun. It's a different experience. It's much different from regular summer camping. It's unlike anything else. You just get a totally different feel of the environment. It's a different experience. But you just have to prepare for it correctly.
Absolutely. Well, and a part of that is that it's more life and death, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. You know, if you're not prepared properly, then you're putting yourself in a much more dangerous situation than if you're just spring or fall or summer camping.
Yeah.
Like if it's summer and you forgot your sleeping bag and tent and warm clothes,
you're probably not going to die. Yeah. You might be uncomfortable
for a few hours, but you're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you are sleeping on like a sharp pointed rock.
Yeah.
You know, but in winter, yeah, that's bad news bears right there.
Yes. Yeah. So, we wanted to talk about, you know, what are the steps that we go through? So not necessarily how is the way to do it, because we're not professionals. We're not here to tell you guys, hey, ours is the best way. This is just kind of some anecdotal evidence from us over the years that, we've learned some life lessons we've learned from snow camping, that hopefully can help you guys really enjoy, snow camping, or, you know, at least try it out in a way that doesn't suck and you're not going to have a terrible time. So you can at least try it out and figure out if you want to continue trying snow camping or not. So,
yeah. And this is, I think my understanding is we're doing more snow camping, not snow wheeling.
Correct.
I mean, mm-hmm. well, they kind of go hand in hand because we're a wheeling podcast. So this is about wheeling and getting out to go snow camping. But this, the focus here is primarily on camping.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So you can take your Prius out or your Previa, your Previon 35s if you want to, and go do some snow camping.
Did you post that meme? I think you sent the meme out, right?
Which one?
The Previa meme.
I don't think so.
It was like a Previa versus the BRZ or the Toyota, whatever. It's not Toyota BRZ. What is it?
That's a Subaru BRZ. Yeah, but Toyota and Scion and Subaru all have the same car.
Right. But what the Toyota version versus a Previa. And it had them compared to each other.
Oh, really?
And the Previa outclassed whatever the BRZ thing is.
What?
Yeah. The GT, I forgot what it was called. But yeah, it has like, it's a vehicle that has six cylinders and a supercharger. You know, like it's an all-wheel drive. You know, it's like has all these, the Previa has all these stats that are outstanding.
Yeah.
Where the, is it a GT?
I don't know
what it's called.
I'll have Brian look it up real quick.
Yeah.
Brian, but, can you check that out, please?
One of our listeners, a crazy not me Instagram handle, somebody he messaged me, he's like, I have one of these. I'm like, what? And he sent me a picture of his Previa doing a burnout.
What?
It was insane. Yeah.
I'm like, dude, that's a four-wheel burnout?
No, his was only the two-wheel drive version, but it was the supercharger one.
Wow.
And it's doing this burnout, and I'm like, oh my god, I want the all-wheel drive one of these guys. I would so turn that into a little camper. Can you imagine having one of those all-wheel drive Previas supercharged and just go down to KOH and you're like,
that would be pretty awesome
motorhome.
I would put a chop top pop-up on it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like a Vanagon kind of thing.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Okay. Let's
So it says the Toyota one is called the Toyota 86.
86, that's right. Yep.
Thank you, Brian.
After the Corolla AE 86. Yeah.
But that car is made in Subaru's Gunma assembly plant.
Oh, wow.
And then it's just badged as Toyota or Subaru out of the
They collaborated together. It's the Subaru power plant, I believe, and then Toyota did like the body work.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So cool stuff. Yeah.
And if you take one of those snow camping, please send us photos.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, man. So let's see. What are we talking about? Snow camping.
Yeah.
What is kind of the general gist of snow camping? What's the number one mistake you see when you go out snow camping with people or hear people talk about when they're going snow camping?
That they're cold.
They're cold.
Yeah.
I agree.
That's the number one thing, like to get like my significant other or anybody else, like, hey, have you ever gone snow camping? It's a lot of fun. You should do it. And they always say, the number one thing they say, no, I don't want to be cold.
Yeah. So how do you not be cold when snow camping? Yeah. Because it is possible.
It is.
Yeah.
And my response to that is, well, I'm never cold.
True.
You know, like, okay, let's not make you cold.
Yeah.
And then would you be willing to go? And then they usually go, no, not really. But so I mean, having good gear is definitely a plus. It's definitely something to be up there. But if you don't have good gear, then just layers, right?
Yep.
If the more kind of layers you can put on, the more comfortable you will become, and you can start shedding layers if you're too hot, or you can add another layer if you're too cold, you know, and you can, it's easier to regulate your temperature when you have layers.
Absolutely. That's one of the things I wanted to touch on. So the way I think of layers is, do you have like a specific way you think of it? Or are you just saying any type of layer, whatever you have, just throw it on? Or is there a certain way, like an order to your layering?
Well, I'll kind of go, through my layers, I guess.
Okay.
But it does depend on what activities I'm doing.
Okay. So let's start at the banana hammock.
Yeah.
And then go out from there.
The Alchonies banana hammock. If I'm doing hiking, I'm wearing less layers cause I know I'm going to be warm. But if I'm at camp hanging out, you know, not being active, like sitting in a seat, having a cold one. I'm usually chonies, long johns, top and bottom. And then, a mid layer pants of some sort, some like not sweats, but some sort of thing like fleece or something like that.
Okay.
A lot of snow camping, what I concern myself with is if the article of clothing gets wet, is it still going to be warm?
Absolutely.
Right.
That is rule number one, in my opinion, for snow camping.
And I think I've said it on here before, and I'll say it again. There are two natural fibers in the world that will keep you warm even if they are wet. Mm-hmm. Do you know them?
Fire.
No.
And
natural fibers.
Oh, natural fibers, not natural fires. Wool is one. Mm-hmm. Isn't the other one silk?
It is.
Okay.
Wool and silk, even if they're wet, they will still keep you warm.
Yep.
So I have wool socks. Mm-hmm. I have wool long johns. Mm-hmm. I have some like polyester or non-natural fiber mid layers that are still semi-warm when they're wet, but they don't like get heavy or they don't sog down. Mm-hmm. And then I usually wear a shell on something on the outside on my pants. Mm-hmm. That's my lower level. My upper level is usually long johns, some sort of t-shirt, like long sleeve t-shirt, typically not cotton because cotton gets cold and heavy when it's wet. Mm-hmm. But I do some sort of like, you know, athletic wicking fabric of some sort. Mm-hmm. And then I do a sweater, usually a wool sweater. And then I have like a waterproof, windproof jacket.
Cool.
And then a beanie. Mm-hmm. You sometimes do two layers of socks where most of the time I'm just one layer of socks, some wool socks, thick wool socks. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I have some very small or tight silk socks as like a liner in a way.
Yeah.
And then wool socks over that. Mm-hmm. And good boots. Mm-hmm. Gloves, I usually actually wear two.
Okay.
I wear some very like almost like latexy kind of very tight mittens, or gloves that, you know, with fingers. And then I wear usually if I'm, doing some kind of hiking or camping, I will put mittens on so I can they're all enclosed into one.
Gotcha.
Because I find that it keeps my hand warmer that way. Mm-hmm. And then if I need to use my fingers, I can pull them out of the mitten and my hand is still, gloved.
Nice. That's cool. I'm very similar. Mm-hmm. The only thing that I would change about that is everything is that I choose centers around keeping moisture off of my body, right? Mm-hmm. So anything that you have needs to be able to wick moisture away and then needs to be able to stay warm once it's wet. So I always wear athletic t-shirt or something underneath as my base layer.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to think about it because a lot of people aren't thinking like, I need to have wool or silk items, you know, like in my day-to-day life. But a lot of people probably have athletic gear that they, you know, go to work out in. Mm-hmm. And that stuff works great.
Yeah, polyester works great. It's not very insulative. There's not a whole lot of R value. It doesn't hold a great R value, polyester, but it dries super quick and it absorbs super quick, which is really nice. So I like to use polyester fibered shirts and pants as much as possible as base layers.
Yeah.
And then from there, I like to put on the wool. Now, I know that a lot of people, I have a big issue with 100% pure wool stuff because it's really itchy and it really bugs the crap out of me. But smart wool stuff or fleece.
Yes.
Fleece is another amazing material. Both of those are actually very soft.
Yeah.
And they hold a lot of insulation value and they stay warm when wet, just like you mentioned.
Absolutely.
So I like to use a smart wool fibers and fleece as kind of that mid insulation layers.
Yes.
And then I'll wear some kind of shell and then the shell is a waterproof. I try and make sure all of my, anything I wear for a shell is going to stand up in rain. It may not stand up if I jump into a lake, but, but in rain and wind kind of thing, that's what I will have on the outside. And then depending on how warm I need to be, how cold it is outside, I will increase the amount of wool or fleece layers I have, my insulating layers.
Yeah, I almost never remove the shell. Mm-hmm. I'm always removing a mid layer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or adding a mid layer.
Yeah.
The shell, like even if it's a very beautiful day and I just have sort of a t-shirt, I still have my shell on.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Because it's just, it's a protective layer from water.
Yep, exactly.
And you don't want to get things underneath you wet.
Mm-hmm.
Another article of clothing I didn't mention, and I think we both do it, is beanies.
Beanies. Mm-hmm. So I actually wear, mainly when I'm out snow camping, I wear a balaclava.
Yeah.
And okay, so yeah, it's essentially a ski mask, right? With a right, beanie, everything kind of built into it. And what's really nice is it has a bungee cords in the mask, so you can pull it up and tighten it over, you know, your, the bottom half of your face. And then the beanie part you can pull down and tighten, so you only have your eyes showing.
Sure. And then you put goggles on.
And you put goggles on. Yeah. And then you walk around like you're at Hammers.
Right.
Yeah. And then, you know, it also, because it's kind of bungee and it's stretchy and it's fleece, you can undo the bungees and pull it all the way down, have a wide open face. You can pull it off and have a neck warmer, mm-hmm, and wear a regular beanie. They're very, very versatile. And I love my fleece balaclava.
Yes.
So that's a big one. Keeping your head warm. Have your head is one of the main ways that your body regulates its temperature.
80%.
80%.
80% of the heat loss in your body goes out of your head.
Mm-hmm. So being able to, you know, if you're really hot, keep your head uncovered. And if you're really cold, keep your head covered,
right,
and have that insulation value on your head goes a really, really long ways in snow camping.
Yeah. One of the rules that I've always gone with, and we're touching a lot on apparel, mm-hmm, I think, because it's one of the most important ways to continue to stay warm.
Yes.
There's other gear that we will be touching here, in a little bit, but, I think apparel's a necessity to discuss.
Yeah.
Something that I've always gone with, as soon as your hands or your feet get cold, that means your core body is cold.
Yes.
Because your body is pulling blood from your extremities to bring it to your core to keep your body warm. Mm-hmm. So if your feet are cold, that means your whole entire body is cold.
You're already dropping in temperature
yep, and you need to add more layers. Mm-hmm. Right. So for the most part, like, I don't have a lot of layers down on my feet. I don't really have a lot of layers on my legs, mm-hmm, but I'm like, I have a ton of layers that are covering my chest because yeah, that's your vital organs and everything is in that area. And if mm-hmm, it starts dropping in temperature, your body goes to an extreme mode and starts pulling blood from your extremities to keep the important organs in your body active, mm-hmm, and alive. And so if your fingers are getting cold and your toes are getting cold, then you're cold and you need to add another layer.
Yeah. 100%. And that's a really good point to point out, in that, you know, your body does this. So if you know that the human body, that's another reason why women tend to get colder hands and feet easier, because they have a few more organs in their torso section. Mm-hmm. So their bodies will pull blood in to protect their organs a lot sooner than guys will.
Yeah, that makes sense. I never thought about it, but it completely mm-hmm, makes sense. Yeah.
And so if you know that, and then you can manage, you know, how much heat is in your core, then you goes a really, really long way to enjoying snow camping.
Right.
And not being miserable. Yeah.
And I think, you know, a lot of my snow camping experiences are backpacking. Mm-hmm. So if you're wheeling, I mean, bringing more clothes is so easy.
Yeah. Right.
Right. It's so easy to overpack. Like, oh, bummer, I didn't wear this other apparel, this other jacket or this other sweater, mm-hmm, you know, because I was warm the whole entire time. Mm-hmm. You know, I would almost say, like, just grab every single coat out of your closet and throw it into the back seat of right, your vehicle. Right. Because if you're cold, just throw another coat on. You know, it's not that big of a deal. When I'm backpacking, it's like, OK, I've got to have a science to this and worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that if you're snow wheeling and snow camping while wheeling, just bring extra gear. Like uh-huh, it's not an issue to have more.
Yeah. It's better to have it, not need it, than absolutely, to need it, not have it.
Right.
Yeah. So that's a good one. The other important one I really wanted to hit on is your feet. Mm-hmm. And we've mentioned this before in talking about camping, hiking, backpacking, wheeling, whatever it is. Us as human beings, we depend on our feet.
Yes.
A lot. So if your feet start getting cold and they become painful, you're not going to be able to get up and move around as much, right? And as soon as you stop moving around as much, your body isn't producing as much heat and you just start cooling down even further. Mm-hmm. So protecting your feet and keeping your feet warm by having good shoes,
yes,
and the proper socks. Never, ever wear cotton socks if you're going anywhere where your feet are going to get wet. because throughout the day in your boots, even if you have really, really good boots that are completely waterproof, right? And you're into your boots, your socks throughout the day, your feet sweat in your socks. And as soon as your socks start getting wet, they now become really cold.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if you have weather waterproof boots, you still do not wear cotton socks.
Yeah. And even then, even if you have waterproof boots, a lot of times they're great at keeping the water out, but they're not the best at letting the moisture release.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you are, I mean, like Gore-Tex is great. And you know, there's some other fibers out there that are good at wicking, but they're not, like, if you're on a hike, you're producing way more moisture mm-hmm. than that can escape out of the boot.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, absolutely. Having good layer of a good shoe or a good boot is the very first step to keeping your feet dry.
Yeah.
It's, you know, that's the outer layer. That's, you know, air quotes, the shell,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then you have the like other layers, some good socks underneath there. Mm-hmm. Another trick I do is usually when I get to like, when I'm backpacking, when I get to camp, the tent set up, camp set up, I change my socks.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, once you're kind of settling in for the day.
And I usually do because I'm wearing the same boots for the most part
because
mm-hmm. I'm not carrying two extra pairs of boots while I'm backpacking.
Yeah.
But I don't tighten my boots as tight because I'm usually just hanging around at camp
mm-hmm.
and I put on much thicker socks,
mm-hmm.
but then I take my, you know, possibly damp socks off. Let my foot dry for a moment mm-hmm. and then add dry socks on,
mm-hmm.
right? And it just is another time when my foot gets to dry out a little bit and I get to add dry socks on and yep. it's, you know, keeping everything dry, which is a benefit.
Yeah. Yeah. Feet, we as human beings, our feet do not like to be damp all the time. They need to be able to dry out. Once you start getting, you know, damp feet, then bad things happen with mm-hmm. Athlete's foot, toe funguses, all sorts of things that can all
ringworm.
you can get really painful foot issues.
Yeah.
If you don't keep your feet dry. So
gangrene.
Yeah, there's a lot of nasty stuff out there. So keeping your feet dry is a big thing, and taking care of your feet while you're out snow camping is
absolutely
a big priority. So let's see, anything else to do with clothing? Because I know that's the number one thing that I see
mm-hmm.
That people do wrong, or I don't want to say incorrectly, but the number one reason why people have bad time when snow camping.
Yeah, I take a silk scarf sometimes.
Oh, okay.
Which acts as like your balaclava, right? Because mm-hmm. it's super light, it's sort of fluffy, right? And mm-hmm. I wear it as, you know, around my neck and just kind of keeps this layer of warmth down in that area.
Yeah.
Down is an outstanding item for keeping warm. It is absolutely horrible if it gets wet.
Yes.
It clumps up, it balls up. It's actually kind of hard to get broken up if you have to like beat it up if it gets wet, because it will like clump up in a ball.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have your shell on and then you have a down jacket and then you have like some wicking material underneath, you know, you're going to be toasty.
Mm-hmm.
There are different levels of down. So, get a quick understanding of how that all works. That, you know, there's 800 fill down, 300 fill down. Really what it comes down to is, how many feathers are within a square inch for the most part.
Okay.
And so 800 fill down is like the little itty bitty tiny feathers.
Okay.
Like that are on like the under layer of like a goose.
Uh-huh.
And then the like 300 or 250 fill downs are the big feathers.
Gotcha.
And so if you have more feathers in a small area, it's more warm.
More insulation.
Yeah, more insulation. So
I've never gotten down anything, down sleeping bags, down jackets, mm-hmm. nothing. Because I'm always afraid that I'm going to mess up and I'm going to get it wet.
Yeah.
And then I won't be able to depend on it anymore.
Yeah. I do. And I have down jackets mm-hmm. and I have synthetic down jackets.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I take the synthetic down jackets out in the winter uh-huh. and I take the down jackets out in the summer.
Gotcha.
Right? Okay. And so it's really a matter of like, when are you going to, you know, what application are you going to apply and when,
yeah,
you know, and the assistant's like, why do you have so many jackets? You know? And I'm like, well, this one's for this purpose and this one's for this purpose. You know?
Yeah.
So, but if you have a down jacket, they work. They're great. Just be conscientious of not to get it wet.
Yeah. And if all else fails, you can get a gear wrench heated jacket and just buy like 7 or 8 batteries and take them with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that those are good suggestions. I'm sure mm-hmm. we're missing some items or some articles of clothing. There's so many different options available. This is kind of how we do it, what mm-hmm. we do on whenever we go out. So I think that that covers it. Just, you know, I think the key things here are layers, mm-hmm. Get fabrics that don't absorb water or will keep you warm when they are wet. Mm-hmm. You know, avoid cottons, mm-hmm. And just, the more, I just want to say the more layers, the more better.
Yeah. There we go. Nice. Yeah. Spend the money where, you're going to get that insulation value on the good fabrics, right? That's mm-hmm. what you want to spend your money on. So like, definitely spend your money on shoes, getting yeah. some good snowshoes. And then, from there, I would honestly spend the money on like your core and your legs on that outer shell.
Yeah.
Before anything else. Cause you can find relatively inexpensive wool stuff for insulation or mm-hmm. fleece things for insulation. You can find relatively inexpensive, polyesters for your base layers. But it's, if you skimp and get a cheap outer shell, then everything underneath you becomes done and toast.
Absolutely. I have a fun little story okay. for you. So when I was in Antarctica,
okay.
Right. We would take the Zodiacs from the cruise ship to the mainland.
Okay.
And the Zodiac, we wouldn't go to a dock. They just sort of nose the Zodiac onto land, and then uh-huh. you'd actually hop out into the ocean and okay. walk onto shore, right?
Off of the off their the saddles?
Off the side of the Zodiac.
Oh, I was thinking Kodiak.
No.
The bear.
No.
Yeah. Bear no. And riding
off it. The side. Yeah. Yeah. We jump onto the Kodiak bear right from the cruise ship. It swims up and we hop yeah. on. Yeah. And everybody has their
training
own,
out there. Yeah. How do they train those things?
Yeah. There's the very low level is a zoo of all the Kodiak bears. One per person on the cruise ship.
Oh, man. Okay. So, yeah. anyway, sorry. You no. bring the Zodiacs up.
Yeah. And you hop off the Zodiac into the ocean, like off the side oh. into the ocean, and you walk up onto shore.
Okay.
Right. Well, there were countless people that did not bring waterproof pants.
Oh, geez.
Right. And that okay. was one yeah. of the things on their list, like bring a waterproof jacket, bring waterproof pants, you yeah. know, and people were like, no, these are fine. And they're yeah. like runner's pants, you know?
Yeah.
And they provided, you could bring your boots or they provided you with boots, and the boots that they provided. And we didn't want to carry these big old boots. So we provided to rent the boots off the cruise ship. Mm-hmm. We're like, they went up to like almost below your knee.
Okay.
Right?
The waders kind of thing.
But they were
not quite as high as
a thick rubber up to your ankle. And then it was a neoprene up to your, below your knee.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Right. So these people that were jumping into the ocean uh-huh. with not waterproof pants had the water go through their waterproof pants, then through the neoprene, uh-huh. right. And down into their foot. And now they are walking around with freezing ocean water yeah. in a pool of their boot when they get onto shore and they're walking around for an hour or so yeah. on land in like where it's not very warm,
yeah.
you know, and they're not happy campers.
Hey, it's getting warmer down there.
It is.
It's almost good turning into summer down there. Yeah. You can have a nice beach front area. Yeah.
I had outstanding waterproof pants mm-hmm. and never once got any water in my boots.
Nice.
You know, my pants went down to where the rubber section of the boot was and it repelled the water fine. You know, mm-hmm. like probably water went up between the boot and my pants when I hopped in because I didn't tuck it in. You know, I yeah. just hopped out. But it wasn't, there was enough to keep it there to repel it. So I never got any water in my boot,
yeah.
you know, and I'm literally hopping into the ocean, right? Mid shin height, uh-huh. you know, walking into shore. But if you have good pants, it really helps.
It goes a long ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. So let's move on to something else. What yes. is something else that people can struggle with, have issues with in snow camping?
I think the next major thing is, because if you can keep warm during the day, then you need to keep warm during night. Mm-hmm. I think that would be the next thing. Because, I mean, yeah, you could, you know, drink yourself and stay warm. Which, actually, here's another funny little story. we have a rule while we're backpacking, because we'll bring some booze and, uh-huh. we'll bring some... What's a fun word for that? I don't know.
Fireball?
No. we'll bring some booze with us. And and our rule is if you start shedding layers, you're cut off.
Oh, because you're getting too warm.
Yeah, because gotcha. Now you're no longer regulating yourself. Now uh-huh. the booze are regulating you, right? Yeah. And we're like, you know, and so now what turned into people were just getting too drunk and not taking their clothes off, right? And so we have like a buddy of leaning over, like sleeping on a log covered in like the logs in snow, and he's throwing up on the other side of the log. He's like, I didn't take any clothes off. You know? Like, all right, well, we need a new rule. But
oh man.
But yeah, so I mean, and that's just another thing to kind of pay attention to, right? Is because alcohol is warming. It will keep you warm. And then if you're too warm when you go to bed, then you're going to get cold.
Well, what alcohol does is it thins your blood and increases your blood flow. Mm-hmm. And so what your body does when it gets cold, we talked about, it pulls all its blood flow kind of back into the core to preserve the core heat. Drinking alcohol will reverse that and keep the blood flow going out to all your extremities. And that's kind of where you're getting that warming effect from. Sure. So by doing that, you're staying kind of, your extremities are staying warmer, but now are you sacrificing your core for that? So, yeah.
So I think, for bedtime, activities, you definitely need to be off the snow.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just be laying on there. I think I've said it before, like with hammocks, the coldest part of you sleeping in a hammock is where your body and the hammock are touching.
Yep.
So because there's no insulation layer between that usually. Mm-hmm. Even if you wrap up in a sleeping bag of some sort, you're just squashing the sleeping bag, mm-hmm. right? So you need something to hold you off the snow, mm-hmm. even if it's like just barely anything. You know, like wilderness people will say, if you don't have anything, start breaking branches and sleeping on top of branches and pine needles, right? Yep. You've got to get yourself off of the snow.
Yeah.
And so, you know, having a good thermarest, having blue pads, like we talked about, mm-hmm. having a nice warm sleeping bag. So here's a question, and everybody does this differently. I don't think there's an answer to this. Do you wear articles of clothing in your sleeping bag, or do you go in like just chonies?
I wear, in snow camping, I wear articles of clothing in my bag. Yeah.
Okay.
And then I'll you know, change that throughout the night too. If I'm really hot in my bag, then I'll take layers off. And mm-hmm. if I'm really cold because my air mattress went away on me in 30 minutes, then I'll put all my clothes on.
All your clothes on. Yeah, absolutely. That I've heard people say that if you wear like thermals, mm-hmm. then your body is only warming up to the thermal layer. Mm. Right. And then it takes a long time for it to then get past that thermal layer and warm up the sleeping bag.
Gotcha.
Right. So if you have any clothes on, it's not, you're slow warming the sleeping bag slower. Uh-huh. Right. Because it's got to go through all these layers to get out to that sleeping bag. Whereas if you're just, you know, in your chonies or whatever, your body's warming the bag. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's a right or a wrong. You might be warmer just in the thermals with the bag, you know, it's all personal preference.
I think it depends on how good your bag is, probably.
Absolutely. I think that's a good part of it. And I think, do you want to go there now?
Yeah.
Bags?
Yeah. Let's talk about sacks.
Let's talk about them. you know, you can have synthetics, or you can have cotton, or you can have down, or you can have, I don't know, polyesters. You can have the like ones that you're going to sleep in your, you know, at a sleepover at your buddy's house, or you can have mummy bags. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's all different types of bags out there. And so do you have one bag? Do you have two? Do you have two sacks? You have one sack?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think I have five or six.
Nice.
You know, but I have like a 45 degree sleeping bag. Mm-hmm. I have a 20 degree sleeping bag. I have a 15 degree sleeping bag. I have 2 0 degree sleeping bags. And then I have like a cotton roll up one of some sort.
Okay.
And really I have the 2 0s are because that's all I ever really take out in snow camping. Mm-hmm. And it's a down version or a synthetic version.
Gotcha.
And that's really about it. So like when I go to KOH, in a matter of days, I'm probably going to take the down 0 degree because I'm going to be in the tent. It's not really going to come out. I'm going to be car camping. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like I'm backpacking. I'm not going to be crossing rivers.
Yeah.
You know, there might be a river in camp, but it's, you know, I'm going to be in above it on the rooftop. So, yeah. And so I think that I've looked at the weather before and been like, oh, it's only going to be, you know, into the teens overnight. I'll bring the 20 degree sleeping bag, and I'm usually cold.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, general rule of thumb is the inside of your tent won't go below freezing. Mm-hmm. But I always take the, now I'm to the point where I just take the warmest sleeping bag I have.
Yeah.
It doesn't, I don't care. You know, I used to be like, oh, I'm concerned about size and weight and, you know, what to carry. But if I'm out car camping, man, I'm just going to throw a 0 degree in.
Yeah.
You know, so I think realize what elements you're going to get yourself into. Mm-hmm. How cold is it going to be wherever you're going to go? If you're mm-hmm. like Tyler and you like to go out in the blizzard, you know, you want to have a good bag. Yeah. If you're going to be sort of a spring, fall, sunny weather snow camping adventure, you probably don't need a 0 degree bag. Maybe you just need out down to a 20 or a 15 degree.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that there are good
what
bags.
What are the benefits between the different types of bags that you mentioned? I know that there's down synthetic. Mm-hmm. You said a cotton fill.
Mummy or squared.
Mummy or squared.
Yeah, mummy. So let's talk about mummies and squares for a little bit. The main difference is that a mummy bag is like tighter to your body. Mm-hmm. And so there's less space in that bag that you have to warm up. Mm-hmm. So the bag will warm up faster than a cotton one or a square style will. And there will be less area to, like, if the squares, and I'm mainly talking about like the feet, right?
Yeah.
Where your feet are, because that's where it gets really narrow. Mm-hmm. If your feet are in one corner and then you like roll over and your feet move to the other corner of that sleeping bag, it's cold over there, uh-huh. right? Because now you got to expel energy to fill that space up.
Yeah.
And warm up your bag again. Mm-hmm. So mummy bags are a lot more tight to your body, a lot more ergonomic, I don't know. Yeah. And so you have to actually, your body is working less to heat up that space because there's less space around.
The big thing that I really do like about mummy bags that square bags don't do, at least very often, is that they cover your head as well.
I was gonna go there.
Okay.
Yeah, that is, they will go over your head. You can use them as like more or less a balaclava in your sense. There's been times I remember a very distinct time out of on Shasta where I was cold. Like mm-hmm. I'm in a 0 degree bag and I'm cold and I cinched down the neck section and the part that goes up and over your hood. And mm-hmm. I literally had only my mouth and my nose out.
Yeah.
And man, did I warm up fast, uh-huh. right? Cause there's my head's now fully covered. Uh-huh. When we talked about your head losing all this heat, I do sometimes wear beanies to bed mm-hmm. and that helps out. And then, and you're just, all that heat is now going into the bag and into the sleeping container contraption that you have. Mm-hmm. And it's warming the bag up.
Yep.
Right. And that then keeps you warm. And so you really can cinch things down and try to thermally regulate yourself just by cinching the bag down on mummies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My thing is I hate mummy bags. I like the idea of them. I like the better insulation, and at least not better insulation, the less space that you have to heat up in them. But a lot of times my feet get hot at night.
I was like going to go there next.
My feet do not get cold at night. And so I have to have my feet kind of separated because otherwise they just start sweating a lot mm-hmm. at nighttime. And as soon as my feet start sweating at night, then they get cold.
Yes.
And so I have to use square sleeping bags.
Okay.
And so what I do, because I love the hood aspect of the mummy bags, I wear my balaclava at night and then I bring a comforter with me mm-hmm. on almost every single trip. So I have my square sleeping bag inside the comforter and kind of the comforter is tacoed over.
Sure.
But that comforter I'd throw over my head and face everything. And I just kind of leave a little hole to get air in there so I don't kill myself.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have to have my feet separate. But that hood is a huge, huge part of staying warm while snow camping and sleeping at night.
Another really side benefit that I like about the hood is I usually throw my pillow inside of it.
Oh yeah.
And it like more or less holds my pillow in a spot. And so the pillow won't move around too much. Yeah. And if like you are on a funky angle and you start sliding, then you actually, your pillow is sliding with you.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I do highly suggest looking at a sleeping bag that has two zippers, do like zip sections of the zipper.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
So you usually there's, and it's almost typical on a lot of sleeping bags now that they have this, there'll be a zipper section or well, I don't know what you want. It's one zipper length, but there's two contraptions that open and close the zipper.
Okay.
I don't know what you call that.
I don't know.
But there's one at the top. So like when you get into your bag, you unzip it and you can hop in. But then there's usually one down at the bottom too. So you can open that up if your feet are getting hot or you need a little air or you. And so I usually always zip the zipper all the way up at the top, cinch myself down. If I'm getting hot, I usually open the zipper at the bottom.
Interesting.
And let the heat kind of go out that way.
All the mummy bags I've ever had, the zipper on the bottom side doesn't like start until my knees. Hmm. And I've all everything else. It's like a pocket that, you know, from your knees down goes into, and the zipper really starts at like your knee up.
Right. But yeah. No, I don't.
Maybe I've never had the right bags.
Maybe. Maybe it sounds like it's a 3/4 zip, not a full zip.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably it.
So, I mean, I think there's differences there, you know,
gotcha.
Because zipper is one of the areas that cold will come through. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of times they'll have a flap that kind of breaks the barrier between the zipper and you. Mm-hmm. But if you have less zipper, then it's less weight and it's less area for coldness
more
to come
insulation,
through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. What about, you said, obviously get you off the ground. So you need some kind of insulation layer between you and the ground. If you're in a rooftop tent, no biggie.
Yeah.
If you're ground camping, biggie. That's a big thing.
Yeah. We kind of talked about this in the last podcast, literally 163.
Yeah. I don't think I want to hit it too much.
Yeah. But I just think you should pay attention to the R value of the mattress that you're looking at, whether it's an air inflatable one. Because normal, like air is a shockingly good insulator.
Mm-hmm. Once it gets warmed up.
Well, even it's good at it holding the coldness away or the warmth in, you know, it's good and it's bad, right? Because it's, if you're got a cold air mattress, it's going to stay cold for a while, but that's a good barrier, right? Because it's actually still doing its job. I would look at, just look at the R value, because the R value, the higher the R value, the more warmth will be, reflected up to you.
Okay.
A lot of times they put something like tinfoil inside of the bag or the air mattress, because it's literally your heat goes down and hits like the tinfoil and it bounces right back up at you.
Yeah.
I have a decent, I think it's like an R value of 8. And you literally, like if you lay on it, you start getting hot. It's awesome.
Nice.
And it's only an inch or so thick, right? Because it doesn't, as long as that reflective material, that R value is pushing the cold down and the warmth up, you're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's talk about a little bit of, if you say you do start getting too cold, how are ways that you can heat back up?
Yeah.
Let's talk about some heating methods.
Sure. I think there's hand warmers, foot warmers, body warmers that are the chemical kind that you can buy at a store.
Okay.
Right. You know, and you just break the package and shake them up and then you hold on to them.
Yeah.
They work well. But they're not like the end all answer.
Yeah.
I think the next one is cuddling.
I was going to say, I have a body warmer.
Yeah.
She doesn't come with me that often.
No, the intern doesn't.
No, he doesn't either. I mean, and his problem when he does go camping with me, he likes to sleep on my feet, which is the hottest part, right?
Right.
Yeah. And then like throughout the night, he'll end up like up against the side of the tent. Sure. And then he starts shivering because I'm like, you dummy.
Yeah, that's a good point too. You know, like, well, I think concern yourself with your shelter, right? How your tent is. Smaller tent, easier to keep it warm.
Yep.
It heats up faster. You'll be warm sooner. Mm-hmm. But bigger tent is obviously more luxurious. You can stand up in it. It's much easier to work with on a camping side of thing, but it's bigger. It's more air. It's harder to warm up quicker. It's, you know, you're going to, it when you guys go to bed, it's not going to, you're going to be cold for a while until that tent warms up.
Yeah.
But to get warm faster, get out of the elements, get into that tent, right? You know, like I talked about the chemical things, but if you don't have that, you know, remove yourself from the environment.
Yep.
If you can get into your rig and turn on the heater.
Yeah. Turn on the rig and turn on the heater. Yeah.
You know, add more layers, boil some water, have some hot cocoa. Mm-hmm. I was going to save this to the end, but I think this is a good spot to put it. One of the tricks I do usually when I'm sleeping, or going to bed while we're out backpacking is, normally we're not taking a ton of water cause there's snow around us. Mm-hmm. And, when we're backpacking, we just boil the snow and make water. Mm-hmm. Right. But then Nalgene's can hold boiling water. Mm-hmm. And so we pour boiling water into the Nalgene and then throw the Nalgene to the bottom of our sleeping bags.
Yeah.
Before we get in it, that warms your entire sleeping bag up.
Yeah.
So when you get in, it's not freezing.
Yeah.
And that water will be 98.6 degrees when you're at the end of the day, because your sleeping bag's probably right around that temperature when you're, you know, sleeping. So it warms it up and it helps keep you warm all night long.
Yeah. That's a good one. One thing that for sleeping at night, I just thought of, try and empty your bladder as much as possible.
Yes.
As you're sleeping throughout the night, if you end up, your bladder gets full throughout the night because you had a lot of drinks around the campfire before, that your body now spends extra energy keeping the fluid in your bladder warm when it doesn't need to. So keeping your bladder empty as much as possible is a huge help. And then, of course, you know, not having to get up and go outside your tent in the middle of the night is also another big help.
Absolutely. This might be gross and offend some people, but I have a pee bottle.
Oh yeah.
So I don't have to leave the tent.
Yeah.
I don't do it. It's only a thing that usually when I'm out with the boys and we're backpacking, you know, we'll usually have yellow Nalgene. So don't ever drink out of a yellow Nalgene. It doesn't sound great, you know, and when you move around in a small tent, everybody's waking up, but you know, and then you wake up and you hear somebody peeing, you know, but that, then you didn't, usually we're out in pretty gnarly conditions, you know, or snow and you don't want to go outside. Everybody in the tent doesn't want you to open the door, right? You know, so yeah, okay. You're peeing in the tent, but you're peeing into the bottle, you know, and you're not getting cold by going outside. You're not making everybody else cold by opening the door. So it's a sacrifice we make.
Yeah. Cool.
And I know some people even take normal camping. They bring a toilet with like a little, and they
put it in their tent,
put it in their tent.
You know, if you have a big enough tent. Yeah, for sure. You can do that. I saw a great, photo the other day of somebody that set up, essentially a shiwi. In a rooftop tent that went into a funnel into a hose and then went down the side of the tent and everything. Then it went into a hole they dug into the ground and this had a rock kind of on top of the hose so it didn't move.
Yeah.
And I was like, there you go. You can have one of those.
I thought about doing a funnel and a hose out of that. Yeah. Out of the rooftop for sure.
Yeah.
Rooftops are nice because you're off the ground. And it has its own, it's got a metal base, but then it has a 2 to 3 inch foam.
Almost all of them come with that in there.
Yeah, in there. So that's pretty nice. And it's, you like, I have me at like 180 pounds. I have sunk through, like laying in one position all night long. I have sunk myself all the way through the foam and onto the metal.
Oh, really?
But if I roll around in the night, I don't ever get, like, I don't get through. So like, if I have a good solid sleep and I'm not moving, like I will get down to the metal.
Okay.
But most of the times I don't.
Okay. Nice. What about fires?
Yes. Fires are fun in the winter, especially if there's a lot of snow, because the fire goes down.
It does. You get to watch it sink.
Yeah. And then it doesn't work as well because all the fire heat is going straight up.
Yeah.
But it's a definite answer to, if you're cold and you're in a dire situation and you need warmth, fires are great.
So let's talk a little bit about different strategies or ways that you can prepare going camping and how you can pack to get a fire going easily.
Okay.
Because I know if you're out snow camping, pretty much everything's going to be covered in snow and moisture. So it can be very difficult to get fires started compared to summer camping.
Absolutely.
So what are some strategies that you can pack, bring with you, do, that'll make getting a fire up and running a lot easier?
Chainsaw.
Okay.
Did I steal yours?
Not quite. Chainsaws are great for, in my opinion, after you get the fire going.
Yeah.
Because then you can, it's very easy to chop up your wood and get it set in a way that's easy for the fire to consume and stay going.
I always carry at least like two or three ways to start a fire. Whether it's a flint and steel matches or a lighter.
Yeah.
Right. And I usually have those three on me at some way or another. Like if you ask me to start a fire or start like, hey, I need to light the stove. I will have at least one of those three on me.
Yeah.
And most of the time, like if I'm going out snow camping, I'll have all three of those on me.
Okay.
Cause a lighter doesn't work if it gets wet. matches really don't work if it's windy, mm-hmm. and a lighter doesn't work if it's windy. And then a flint and steel almost always works, except you've got to know how to use it. And we've talked about that in the past, yeah. and it's harder to get it going.
Yes.
So, but the act of then using the flint and steel would start making you warm because now you're moving around, but that's another point. I would say that then other things you could use, like rip up a magazine, use some paper, find some toilet paper, mm-hmm. some napkins or paper towels,
paper plates,
some sort of fire starter mm-hmm. stuff. If you are forward thinking enough and you bring some sort of wax and sawdust situation, you know, or glue and sawdust, or the, you know, there mm-hmm. are some glues that are okay to burn that help hold the sawdust together that, you know, works really good as a fire starter, or some of those Duraflame logs mm-hmm. if you have them. Mm-hmm. I don't really bring any wood with me. I usually try to still scavenge for wood, and mm-hmm. the places that you can find that are the low-hanging branches on trees. Mm-hmm. Usually those are under foliage. They're already dead. The foliage above them has the snow load on it. Those are usually dry and really easy to break off and mm-hmm. use. And so I don't know. That's a,
what about tinder? Cause a lot of times tinder. So, you know, when you're building a fire, you want to start with your fire starting parts. Mm-hmm. And then you need some kind of tinder to kind of catch that on fire and keep it going so that you can catch then your bigger or medium sized sticks yeah. on fire, and then work your way up to the bigger stuff. Mm-hmm. So how do you find tinder when scavenging in the snow?
I guess I kind of look for dead pine needles or mm-hmm. Pine cones okay. that aren't wet. Mm-hmm. A good trick that I use sometimes is if I have, like, let's just say a sheet of paper uh-huh. or newspaper, I fold it up a bunch of times and then twist it tight. Uh-huh. And it turns it into sort of a weak log okay. because it will burn. It'll still all burn, but it burns slower.
Yeah,
because it's the paper's denser together, tighter mm-hmm. together. And so it doesn't burn any hotter. It doesn't change, you know, it molecularly. It just burns slower. So it'll burn longer.
Yeah.
Which are the same thing. But then it catches anything else, kind of helps catch other things on fire. Mm-hmm. I would go, you know, I've actually changed my theory on how I've been building fires lately. Huh. I put some, like, two or three big logs at the very bottom. And mm-hmm. then I put, like, paper on top of that, and then the smaller tinder, and then some medium sized branches up top. Mm-hmm. And that way, whenever there's coals or whatever, it's falling down onto the big pieces. Mm-hmm. And so you're kind of building the fire on top of the wood, you know, and it's kind of, it works that way. And that would work well in the snow, because then your fires, and everything's sort of above the snow level. Uh-huh. So, and I think that's a kind of a key, like, you will, the fire will start melting the snow and turn it into ice first, and then start melting it down. But there's water there, so you got to kind of hold it off of that for a little bit.
Yeah. No, that's a good point, because I think a lot of people don't realize that that's a good practice, putting down the logs like that, because also what happens is the logs will end up having air gaps between them
yep.
that allows the fire to breathe as well.
Yeah.
I think too many people take their tinder, their starting sources, and just dump them, like, straight on the ground.
Yeah.
And then they wonder why their fire piddles out.
Yeah.
They start adding stuff to it.
Build a log cabin or a teepee mm-hmm. or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. I'm a big fan of, because we were out last weekend and we even had a hard time keeping the fire lit with using gasoline, 2-stroke
oh, wow.
mixture. But that was also because the kids threw a bunch of green boughs in it as well. And sure. I was like, the gasoline will burn it up, and it wouldn't stay lit. And so we ended up having to deconstruct everything, pull all the green stuff out, and then oh, wow. redo it. But yeah, don't use green stuff to try when you're trying to start a fire, especially in the snow if there's moisture in it as well. So mm-hmm. I really like the Duraflame logs. they work great as long as you have a flame to start them with, and you can catch them on fire. They work great, but you can get a Duralame log, and you can cut it up into little sections and take, you know, keep those sections in your camping equipment, keep half of the sections in your camping equipment, whatever it is. And that way, whenever you need to start a fire, you can just pull out one of those sections, a little chunk of it, and get it going.
Yeah.
So those work really great. You know, I've always got my chainsaw on me if I go camping. So I use my two stroke. I'll build a little teepee with, you know, your tinder in the middle and air gaps at the bottom, and, you know, douse the teepee in a little bit of two stroke and then stand back and light it.
Yeah. Throw the match.
Yeah.
Woof. Yeah. Or make the stream back farther that you only light the little stream.
Yeah. Yeah. I did that, the Friday night, for my last trip, and I put a little too much gas on, and I was a little too close, and it went right next to my face. I was like, oh man, am I missing some eyebrows?
Yeah. I do that with my heater in the shop sometimes.
Yeah.
I have to remember, like, okay, when I let go of this button, it's going to just ignite and lean my head farther away.
Yeah. So cool. That's some good stuff about fires.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we came across that I wasn't anticipating was our fire got down to the ground, and it melted a lot of the snow around the fire as well. And so we ended up kind of standing in a puddles throughout the night. And then we came back in the morning and it was all frozen over, solid blocks of ice. So be careful about that. If you're going to light your fire the next morning and you can see the ground, it's probably a block of ice through it. So
ice. And I actually don't really bring a chair when I go snow camping a lot of the times, depending on the level of the snow, because a lot of times I can make a chair out of snow and then I just put down a pad that has a decent R level, R rating on it, and I sit on top of that, and I'm set, you know. That was more when I was backpacking. I guess car camping doesn't really matter, but, you know, kind of the gist here, I think, is, you know, pay attention to your surroundings, keep yourself out of the cold if you can, you know, like if you're sitting on snow and you're wearing like normal jeans, now you're going to get your jeans wet, you know, and now you've got to pay attention to, you know, how to dry things off. I think another thing that I want to go back to kind of, sleeping bags for a quick second.
Okay.
I usually put some of the articles of clothing that I'm going to wear the next day down at the bottom of my sleeping bag.
Oh,
so one, they're warm, but two, they also take up some of the space.
Yeah.
And so I don't have to try and heat this as much of the space as I possibly can.
That's a good tip. That's something I don't do that I wish I did.
Yeah. And so if you have a square ended sleeping bag and your feet will move the clothing around, like that's not a problem, you know, but it will close off some of the excess air that's in there.
Yeah.
And when you wake up in the morning, then all you have to do is slide on the pants that are already fairly warm and not freezing.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to be on the outside of your sleeping bag usually, you know, and so it's going to be one of the insulating layers. So it's not going to be like as warm as you are. It'll still be a little chilly, but it won't be like 30 degrees, or 0 degrees C out from just inside your tent or whatever.
Yeah.
So, and I usually throw on, cause I usually don't wear long johns, to bed. I just wear chonies. And so I usually throw socks down there. I'm usually wearing my day socks or my like campground socks. Yeah. I have like one pair that's really thick that I wear when I get to camp. Yeah. Right. I talked about that. And so whenever I go out hiking, I always change that socks out. But then when I come back, I put on the big thick one, that pair that I wear at camp. And so I usually wear those to bed, but then I pull them out of the bag while I'm gone throughout the day so they can dry and breathe. Right. And then whatever the pair I'm wearing the next day is in my sleeping bag. So I can swap out my sleeping bags or my socks.
So you have this big rotation going on while you're camping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do. I'm always kind of rotating, especially snow camping, right? I'm always rotating my clothes because you want to let the stuff dry out and you want to, keep yourself dry.
Yeah.
And, I think is whenever you're warm in your sleeping bag, and if you don't have to get out of your sleeping bag to change some of your layers, you stay warm longer.
Have you ever thought about putting a little drying rack next to your catalytic converter?
No, it's not a bad idea.
Let that run 15 minutes and then hang your clothes up next to your
cat. It's like a manifold burritos right? and catalytic converter dryer.
As you're wheeling around for the day, you just got socks hanging down next to your cat.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. That's funny.
There's a maybe not $1 million idea, but it's at least a $10 idea.
Yeah, well, when I was at SEMA in, what it was, at 2019, there was a guy that they made like a crock pot or a slow cooker thing, and they rerouted your radiator. And they used the radiator as like
the heating element,
The water, and then they had like a pot inside that was, you know, was at a few hundred degrees.
And it just circulate air, kind of like an oven? So
no, the water circulated. The radiator, the antifreeze circulated through it.
Gotcha. So I'm envisioning putting like a circular heater core in it. So the water is going through your tubing and maybe with some heatsink fins on it. Mm-hmm. And then it also having a fan that circulates on the outside of that, but then the air goes from the outside through the heater core into whatever you have in the middle. Mm. So it's kind of like a little convection oven.
Yeah. That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
I'm trying to rattle my brain if there's anything else that we kind of need to talk about while snow camping at camp.
I think we did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
I think the big theme here is insulation and keeping yourself out of the element.
Yeah.
Right. So having a good outer shell that keeps you from getting snowy or wet or water inside, moisture inside your insulation. Taking care of your feet and keeping your head covered. And then the same rules can be applied to your sleeping bag, your sleeping arrangements. Mm-hmm. Take care of your feet. Keep your head covered. Keep that insulation from the ground. Get out of the elements inside a tent, inside something.
Right.
And then fires, you know, there's a lot of different tricks out there for starting fires in cold, wet environments. Mm-hmm. So, you know, do a little bit of research on that. Carry some Duraflame logs, carry some flint steel, know how to use it. Carry Fritos, know how to use those. Carry tinder cotton balls with you, some kind of tinder. Dryer lint.
It's
amazing at tinder as well. So if you're emptying your dryer one day, throw a Ziploc bag together with a bunch of dryer lint in it and put that in your camping stuff.
Right.
Lots of different little tricks for starting fires in cold, wet environments. Know when you're getting cold.
Yes.
Before you get cold.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
I thought of something else, and that kind of parallels with it is calories.
Oh yeah.
Your body working to stay warm is burning a lot of calories.
It is.
And so just kind of bringing your normal camping, summer camping food is not really enough. Mm-hmm. Bring more food, bring more calorie dense food, drink water, stay hydrated. Just consider, figure that your body is going to be working harder to keep you warm. So fuel your body while you're out there.
Yeah. There's a great hiking, backpacking snack called Bricks. And they're pretty much just fat, butter, sugar, brown sugar, and oats.
Okay.
And they're literally like 2,000 calories in a brick, about, I don't know, by 4 inches, something like that. And they are amazing. If you take them snow camping, they're great. You get a little sugar high, a sugar rush from them, but it gives you a lot of that fat content that your body needs.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that's another thing about you may be able to eat a lot of calories, but your body breaks down calories in your food a lot quicker if you have fat in your food as well. Mm-hmm. If you don't have a lot of fat content in your food, then it's harder for your body to break down that food and turn it into heat or energy.
Sure.
So having a slightly higher fat content in your food while you're winter camping is a very good thing to have.
Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We used to do, when we're backpacking, because we're concerned about weight, I would make a breakfast called Jenk.
Okay.
Or that's what I called it. I don't know if it had another name, but it was instant mashed potatoes, instant stuffing, bacon bits and Cheez-Its.
Ooh, and, that sounds
and
great.
And you just kind of, and it's like equal portions besides the bacon bits, right? It's equal portions. Yeah. Of the, so you get this cheesy mashed potatoes with stuffing, more or less, and you throw it, and you add the water to it and you just stir it up. And
you just like keep it in like a Ziploc bag and then dump it out when you're ready to eat.
Yeah, I would make enough for like the 2 or 3 days that I was going to be out there.
Yeah.
You know, and it, you make a little bowl full and you're like, oh, I need a little bit more and I need some water. And then, yeah.
That sounds great.
It was, it's super easy. And it's warm in the morning because you got to heat up the water. You know, it's a warm, simple, easy, lightweight food that we would take.
Yeah. So, Mountain House makes their, potatoes and gravy, not potatoes and gravy. Biscuits and gravy. Mm-hmm. They make a biscuits and gravy that is amazing for wintertime camping breakfast. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't done too many Mountain Hatches, morning stuff because a lot of them require
Mountain
House. Thank you. Yeah. Not Mountain Snatch. That because they require multiple pots or multiple steps.
Okay.
Most of the time. And so I haven't tried a lot of those because what most of the time I'm eating those, I'm out backpacking and I'm like, I don't want to start 2 stoves. I don't want to run multiple pots. I just want to make it like simple and easy and go.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, I like that idea with the jank. You'll have to get that. I'll have to get that from you and make some for my next outing.
Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, instant mashed potatoes, instant stuffing, Cheez-Its, and then a little bit of bacon bits for taste.
Nice.
And it's equal parts. Also it's like 1/3. Mm-hmm. Instant mashed potatoes, 1/3 stuffing, and 1/3 Cheez-Its.
Nice.
That, it's super simple.
Do you crush up the Cheez-Its or just kind of throw them? Okay.
Yeah, crush it up.
I like it.
And then I usually throw it in like a quart size Ziploc bag because you don't need a lot because that everything expands
out, yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, you only need a little bit, you know, and you can always go back and have more if you're still hungry. So it works out. It's pretty easy.
Cool. I like it. Awesome. Anything else to add to this? I think we did it pretty good justice.
Yeah, I think we did really good. I think we've covered it now a few times, but layers, clothes, you know, just plan to stay as warm as you possibly can. If you be aware of when
stay
you're
away from cotton. Stay, I think that's a rule, kind of rule number one, stay away from cotton during winter camping conditions.
Just be aware of the elements, be aware of what your body's doing. You know, if you're starting to get cold and you don't have any more layers, you know, put your sleeping bag on. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. Sit around the fire with your sleeping bag on. I just hope that this kind of gives you guys some ideas, makes it easier to go out and try snow camping. I love snow camping. It just brings this sense of serene and calmness, I guess, because like my life is so hectic as it is in my everyday day-to-day life. So getting out and going snow camping is like the ultimate getaway for me, the ultimate escape, and kind of recharge, reset. And just snow adds this audio diminishing thing, sense to your surroundings that you don't get anywhere else ever. So it's a really cool environment. It's really neat. You don't run into other people out there. So you kind of almost get this personalized experience. That's just you and whoever's with you.
Yeah. There's a lot less traffic. There's something about snow that just is it. I agree. There is a calming aspect of being out there. It's, you know, it's interesting because I mean, we kind of talked about it last time too, where it's, the snow is dense, so the sounds are, it's super quiet, you know, things don't echo as much, things aren't as, you know, like you can literally hear snow falling and hitting snow.
Yeah.
You know, it's very bizarre. And yeah, there's not as many people out there, so you're more alone, you know, it's not as chaotic, you know, you're more on your, by, you know, on your own in a way. It's, I almost never go summer backpacking because it's just like I don't want to go I want to go backpacking to get away from people, and you can't do that in the summer.
Yeah,
and that's why I would always, I'd go from like November to March is when I went backpacking. I do agree that it's also, you know, I think something we should say is if you are planning on going snow camping, you know, let your neighbor, let your parents, let you people know where you're going to be going. Tell them when you're going to be home. And if you, you know, have a time of like a drop dead time of like, if I'm not home by this time, call these people or get on this radio or whatever, you know, there, you know, it is there is a danger level to this that is higher than, just normal camping. Cause like we said, you are away. Nobody else is going out there, you know, and nothing's happening. Did you hear that, Jace? Just yesterday, I think they went out and rescued a snowboarder that was out backcountry snowboarding. Mm. You know, and if he's out backpack or backcountry snowboarding, he has, he knows something about the elements, you know, but search and rescue had to go out and get him, you know? So, there is a safety factor there of, you know, just keeping people informed about where you are and what you're up to.
100%. Yeah. So, cool. I think that does it. Good. I think we did it. We did good. We done good, bro.
Right on.
Yeah, bro. Come on, bro. So cool. If people want to give us your ideas, some stuff that maybe we missed, because that's one of the things that I love about this, doing the podcast, is, you know, we have a lot of experience doing stuff. We have a lot of ideas, but I'm always amazed at the different ideas and solutions that everybody else has come up with.
Oh, absolutely.
It's awesome.
And we have, you know, like we have California snow wheeling out here, but you know what? Minnesota snow wheeling is a completely different animal, and absolutely. They do different things out there, and it's fun to learn what other people do across the nation.
Yeah, for sure. So send those into, you can email those at Jimmy or Tyler at snailtrailforexroar.com. If you want to send us some pictures or video of some of the fun items you have that make snow camping a lot easier for you, DM those to us, or post them on Instagram, tag us. That's at 4x4 Toyota Tyler, at snailtrail4x4. I love the different ideas that people come up with. So
yeah, and if you're down in Australia right now, I hope you're having fun in the sun.
Right. It's 110 degrees over there right now.
Right.
Yeah. I'm excited.
46°C.
Yeah, I'm excited. I've got 3 or 4 more snow wheeling trips planned for this year. I'm going to try and get at least one more snow camping trip in this year. We just got, 8 feet of snow in the Sierras. We're due to get another 1 to 3 feet this week. So I'm excited. This is the time of the year that I love.
Might snow on me down at KOH.
Yeah. So I'm bummed. I'm bummed that I'm missing KOH, but at the same time, I'm kind of like, oh, I got my full snow season. I'm not having to take a week out of snow season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, cool. Do you have any final words for everybody?
Go snow camping.
And with that, my friends, keep snow crawling.
I got one for you.
Okay, I'm ready.
What do you call a nervous javelin thrower, tosser, person? Javelier? What do you call it?
I don't know.
What do you call a nervous javelier?
A javelinian?
Javelinian.
I have no idea.
A Shakespeare.
Oh. Okay.
I wasn't being very Shakespeare-ish right then, though.
No. It was very anticlimactic, but that's not the right word for what it was.